Hello, and welcome to Awakenings. Hello to everyone in the chat. Wait, Blog Talk. Once again, it's 2 cents in. And my wonderful music that I'm playing in the beginning of Awakenings and the BTR, you know, sound logo comes on. That is Diane Garris, actually who we're going to have on, I believe it's November 12th, amazing musician and channeler. And I wanted to say hi to everyone that I see coming in the chat room. Wonderful to see everyone and connect with everyone's energy through this converging flow. You know, really, I want to also just heartfelt thanks to everyone. I mean, Awakenings is the sum total of each and every one of us. And as we're meeting and connecting in individually in this collective, there's such wonderful heart energy and support for all of us. And what we are doing in traveling, as to say in the Native American tradition, this red road, but we're remembering the blue road, our spirituality. And that is going to be more and more needed as you can see things coming unglued. I think it was Walsh earlier on the in the chat, I was saying that everybody connecting, especially in these worldly times, what's going on the material plane or what seems to be all coming apart at the seams. The response was, well, I don't have any money anyway. And it's like, but you know what? It's true. Those of us that have lived on the high highs or low lows or in between or have been able to shape shift in our life because of circumstances or perhaps having more awareness or being more spirit-led, you know, you look around and you go, well, we can develop a different game or do it differently, or I had a lot one time and now I have a little, or I had a little and now I have a lot. There's that non-attachment. So, you know, what I would share with all of you is just be aware that you are teachers in your own right by example, by what you've had and not had and what you have thought and not thought, you know, the mental flexibility and emotional and spiritual awareness that you've been able to have, because so much of what's happening right now in the material plane or more mainstream consciousness is really because of inflexibility. It's because of patterns that what we're going to be talking about today, patterns that, you know, maybe at one point served people well, but have in a sense, you know, to use a psychological term, become pathological, you know, which I look at, pathology is a path that doesn't work. And when we're aware, you know, when we're awake and we're looking around, we go, wow, that's not really working so much. You know, I think I'm going to shift this or change this, or maybe I'm going to get some input from someone or some different idea. And as you can see, what happened in the mainstream world or mainstream consciousness that we're a part of but didn't necessarily totally subscribe to all the rules and regulations is inflexibility. It has to be this way. This is the way that it does. This is the way, you know, the systems work. And that inflexibility is causing things to break and to crumble. And the other side of this, instead of, you know, everyone will be more like bamboo. But you may find people in your life looking at you like, you know, how do you do this, or what are you going through, or, you know, how come you seem so up, or you are down or you're depressed, but, you know, not totally. You still have a glimmer of hope, or maybe some of you are looking at different creative aspects or ideas that you want to get into, or new businesses, or letting your own gifts, your own truths come forth more, whether just with friends and family or maybe as a vocation or a career. Maybe you're saying, hey, now's the time for me to kind of step forward with what I want to do, living more as the artist. And that's really what this change point is about living creatively, creative solutions, creativity, self-expression. We're talking about integrating, instead of mostly only living from the first and second chakras, it's about integrating the individual chakra, the power center, which is also the inner child center of the third chakra, but the heart center, what makes my heart sing. You know, where do I feel a resonance? Where do I feel a heartful flow? And then the throat chakra, self-expression, listening to our own inner knowing, listening to our own inner guidance and following that. So the things to look at is, where can you express? You know, through books, through audio tapes, CDs, just communicating, just opening up your self-expression through painting, through drawing, through pottery, through music, for how you dress, you know, how you do your house. Think of how can I express my light more? Where and how can I express my light more? And then being open to how it's received, the abundance that comes in for you, you know, and be open that it's not always just going to be monetary. Because that's kind of a little, we talked about that, you know, Wednesday. That can be a boring game, as everybody's seeing now on the material, that are overly focused on the material play. It's a fun game, but when that's the only game in town, when that starts crumbling, and that's what you think that you are, then, you know, there's a problem there. So today we're going to have, I'm so excited because we have a little, we have an aware, awake sandwich. How do you like that? We have Dougie Slap on today, and we're going to dive into a little bit. I want to read a little bit of his book, and then we're going to be talking about shifting patterns and beliefs, mental constructs. And then later tonight, we have our very own Chad Lilly, which everyone knows, from Aware Talk Radio and Inner Circle Publishing. And then tomorrow morning at 10 a.m., I'm going to be on Dougie Slap's show. Or should we be more? Should I be more professional? Doug Malloy, his show on Aware Talk Radio. And what, you know, we've been talking obviously in the chat, and when we've each come on each other's show, and you know, Douglas and I were talking about, you know, these beliefs, these constructs that get in the way from people really experiencing or expressing, you know, and he's always talking about, you know, kind of finding something real, being true. And I know I'm botching that up, but he'll correct me when he comes on the line, or maybe he can type it in the chat. So we're going to look at how to shift beliefs and mental constructs. And his idea, which I love this, was ask now, what purpose does this serve me in my life? Whatever you're going through, where is it taking me? So we're going to talk about that, and then tomorrow on his program, I will be doing some repatterning and meditation processes to clear the stuck or mental constructs. Because really, this is really about all of us living more fully. I know it seems scary out there, you know, and I've had my little thoughts too, you know. I've had to do my little all your needs are met meditation also. But at the same time, it is a call for us to get more creative. You know, the problem solving, the inventions come out of a need. In the runic tradition, Nathis is the name, or need, N-I-E-D. And it really is that need is the mother of invention. It's the birth of invention. We don't evolve or co-create. We're kind of getting a little stagnation. So it's sometimes easier to take risks and put yourself out there and say, you know, what the hell? I might as well try this idea right now. Or I've always wanted to do readings. Kathy, I see you in the chat. I know that. You know, Teresa, all of you with your wisdom, your understanding. You know, tonight when we talked to Chad, he started a publishing company. What I want to say to everyone is, why not? Why not? And if you're having thoughts of wanting to experience and express more in your life, but something seems to be snagging you or holding you back, you know, whether it's inside your head or environment, people around you, this is the show, this is the program for you today, tonight, tomorrow. We're all in this together. And we're all going to that other level. We're all whatever, you know, we all can kind of look around and say, oh, that person's doing more of this, and they're doing more of that, or they have more of this. But in our own life path unfolding, we all have our areas where in our mind we have a little dream of doing something a little differently or a little more, shining a little more. And maybe there's a part that says, oh, you can't, or not now, or, but the time is now. The time is now. So I wanted to read something from Douglas Malloy's book, The Nature of the Self and the Social Evolution of Humanity. And there's some little goodies in here. Just want to read a couple things for us to meditate on and savor a little bit. And he says, however, as long as we live fear as opposed to love, law is opposed to forgiveness, and violence and war as opposed to doing unto others, we maintain and live Jehovah's ideology rather than the ideology of what works according to life's intended design. Each of us is responsible for choosing whom we serve through what we feel, think, and act on. So to me, that's telling me like those false gods. Are we going for what's outside of our truth, that just what mainstream consciousness is saying that we need to do? Because remember, the ones that we're supposed to be knowing so much in the financial industry, the ones with all the letters and degrees, kind of got us into this mess, okay? So sometimes your own inner knowing is more, and we have to learn to trust that. Sometimes we know more than those that are supposed to know more, okay? Dougie Slap's putting their false gods. Yeah, we're our own inner guru. So we really have to kind of be able to look within. Those who hold to negative modalities will be removed from this planet, as what comes are peace, love, kindness, and that which is life itself. Each of us is responsible for choosing love, forgiveness, and doing unto others, or what is antithetical to these. Essentially, if we hope to be left behind as the harvested, we must be and know the reality that comes as fourth density upon this planet. Fourth density is the new age dawning. Everyone who holds to fear, guilt, ignorance, arrogance, and denial will find their ideology ceasing to exist as a planetary realness. This is why it is so important to end our personal and social involvement with the untenables that soon become extinct. 2012 is the timeline for what ends and what begins. And so with that, I really want to bring a warm welcome to Douglas H. Malloy, also known as Dougie Slap.
Yeah. Well, you know, that was some scary stuff. You know, I have to ask myself sometimes, did I really write that stuff?
You know what, and I did the old, because I read your book, but I thought, oh, I want to read a little of the book. And I, of course, I did the synchronistic thing to do. I just opened it
right
to the page, and of course, it was exactly on what we're going to be, you know, talking about. You know, and I love what you say is that 2012 is the timeline for what ends and what begins. I love you saying that, and I also see, I love what you're saying, this, these other ideologies are ceasing to exist as a planetary realness.
Right.
It's like you're saying they're going to be extinct, right?
Yeah, well, it's kind of like if we look at something, does it correspond mm-hmm. to the reality as it exists, or is it contrived, is it based upon false doctrine? If we look at a lot of the systems theories that we live by, and systems theories are things like science, religion, business, politics, education, the legal profession, medicine, and so forth, mm-hmm. we find that there are certain ideas that are basically held within the philosophy of the system and within the psychology of the individual that it ties themselves to a particular belief system.
Mm-hmm.
And then we
so break that down. Break that down, Dougie. Break it down.
Okay, so what we have is that, let's say I'm an individual who believes a particular religious doctrine. Mm-hmm. And let's say this particular religion believes in the idea of, say, Buddha, or in the case of Hinduism, a Ramakrishna. How does that idea of a representation assist me in understanding my life as a representation of the same realness?
Mm.
How does it assist me in doing that? And what happens is there always comes a point in which my life is me and the representation of what I believe become two different things. I am not Ramakrishna. Yes,
yeah.
I am the image and likeness of God. So how can I stand as a representation of that according to what's real and true? And oftentimes when I look at a particular dogma or a particular doctrine, that doctrine does not allow me to be the realness, it does not allow me to be the truth of within the context of my life, which is a representation of that.
Mm-hmm.
So
see,
then
and I
we're...
Think, oh, go ahead.
Oh,
what
I was
say?
Just
going to
say, I was going to add one more point, and so mm-hmm. then the question becomes, how do I get to that point in my life in which my life is a representation of what's real and true according to my life, as a representation of that.
Absolutely. So that to me, and you'd put in the chat earlier, the false god, so following that which is not us. And because between now and 2012 and beyond, 2012 is just a little turning point. That means the universal or collective closet is just a little bit more in order, but it's not complete by any means. And we're only at the tip of
the
Aquarian Age anyway.
The way that I have read, and I think it was Mary Summerrain was the particular author in the book, was Phoenix Rising.
Yeah.
And she mentioned that what you have is you have a changing the birth. The Earth is giving birth to a new planet.
Mm-hmm.
In order for the birthing to take place, those things that do not correspond to the reality that comes are simply going to be eliminated, removed, torn asunder. You have a lot of words that you can use. It basically means that the Earth is giving birth to itself as a new reality. That reality is based upon equality, balance, relationship, purpose, and harmony, rather than hierarchy, elitism, superiority, chosenness, good versus evil. So
mm-hmm.
what you have in the context of our humanity, are we a human representation of the reality that comes as the planet, or are we holding to ideas that correspond to something that came a long time ago and converted the mindset to a hierarchical, confrontational, selfish point of reference?
Mm-hmm. Yes, and so to me, this gets to and there's an amazing astrological component to this of the human design, but to me it goes beyond human design. We have to get back to our original design, which is inside us.
Right.
You know, that is us, that what we call in repatterning work, the energetic matrix, the energy of who we are, the vibrational frequency, the signature, and however that is expressed in experience. And I love, Doug, what you say a lot. You say a lot, something to the effect of enjoying your life as only you can, you know,
mm-hmm.
or being you as only you can. So it really is about all of us stepping forward or forth and living our life by our own original design. That doesn't mean we don't take some other things on or integrate or, you know, that we have societal rules. But in many ways, I use this analogy in my spiritual coaching practice, that many people have a rule book that they've been following. And at some point they get pissed because they realize it isn't their rule book. It's not their manual. And that's
what's
happening now.
Yeah, see, one of the things that I talk about, there are no manuals. And people can say, well, you know, the Rig Veda of Hinduism is a manual, and the Buddhist sutras
still
are
beliefs,
a manual, and the
right?
Bible
still
is a manual.
I said.
But always we come back to, if we take the idea that the representation that we are, which I mentioned about in the book, which is simply mind, body, spirit, and soul, each one of us is going to represent that in a different manner and way, specifically when it comes down to gender, specifically when it comes down to race, specifically when it comes down to core issues, core beliefs, and so on. And so when we look at the idea that you mentioned at the beginning of the show, is what purpose does this serve my life or my experience, it gives us a basis for understanding why experience represents itself in our life as it does. So what happens is that when something takes place, we get a chance to see, is it based upon pain, fear, guilt, arrogance, ignorance, indifference, intolerance, and so on. And what happens is that it allows us to examine from the point of involvement, of basically recognizing what is going on and why. And the fortunate thing is that there is nothing in our life that we cannot change with enough faith, desire, and intention.
Mm-hmm.
Because what we find is that if there is something that we dislike, or if there is something that we want enhanced, if there is something that we want altered, there are the means within our life in which we can accomplish that. And if we simply summed up the process as there's the existence of, and then there's extension and expansion as an experienced expression, we find, oh, okay, if we understand the nature of energy, which is positive, negative, and neutral, that simply tells us that our experience is going to be positive, negative, and neutral. And when the negative aspect of energy presents itself, we can simply recognize that and say, okay, well, what is this based upon as what I feel and what I think as an activity of engagement or involvement?
Wow. Nuggy. I gotta take a breather on that one.
Yeah, it's I mean, if we stop and think about what's going on, I'm going to put it in a context that people can relate to. We have the invader culture, we have indigenous people, and then we have the rest of humanity. Now, the invader culture mindset and the indigenous way of life involve approximately 0.7% of the planet. Then there's 99.3% of the rest of humanity that isn't involved with the invader culture mindset. They might be engaged in the philosophy, not recognizing what the philosophy is. Then there's the indigenous way of life. I hold a very simple argument that you have invader cultures that give us the current world drama, which is war, greed, class distinction, oppression, and so on. You have indigenous people, which are simply living their biology within the context of a simplicity in which the biology of the culture works within the context of the biology of the planet. So there's an integrated synthesis that takes place within the context of the indigenous people. Now, the rest of us are simply involved with our kind of psychology and philosophy. So what we have a chance to do is simply understand, well, what's going on within the context of my biology? What is it within the context of false doctrine that I might be identifying with or relating to? And how can I live my life in a way in which there is a way that's conducive to my life according to the biology of the planet and my life as a biological representation?
Mm-hmm.
And how can I understand the invader culture mindset for what that is involved with, and hopefully minimize that is going on? Because what people don't realize is that the end of the world only pertains to the invader culture mindset.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's very, very important for us to simply have an understanding of what the invader culture is. What the invader culture is involved with, and what is its protocol. And its protocol is simply that you have very, very specific doctrines that it lives by that happens to lead to things like war, greed, class distinction, oppression, and so on. And then we're
now,
brought...
When you're saying this, Dougie, I'm thinking, though, it's a balance. We are a bit of that, because even when you go to get food, I don't even care if you're, you know, completely vegan or vegetarian, when you go to get that lettuce leaf or even growing your garden and then, you know, cutting the leaves off to make the tomatoes, picking them, you're in a sense invading or entering in, and that species is alive. Everything is a sentient being.
Mm-hmm.
I think for me, what I'm hearing in this, it's really about balance. That, and again, I go back to what I said in the beginning with flexibility, and that's Once we're all, and it becomes more, you know, many of us are already doing this, but once it becomes more mainstream and people know how to read their own inner map, once people know how their mind works, we don't have to get stuck with these false gods or doctrines or get stuck with these inflexibilities. You can just go in your mind, get in the meditative state, and shift the pattern, shift the belief if it no longer serves the highest good. But part of what I'm hearing you say, Doug, is that people, certain groups of people got just stuck in this, invade, and then it just snowballed. You know,
yeah,
more war, more greed.
Became,
they don't know anything else, it sounds like.
Right. It basically is that if you take one simple belief system, good versus evil, good versus evil is a mindset that everybody believes in. There's also the idea of the holy war. And so what we find happening in our experiences is that as long as we hold to the idea of good versus evil, as long as we hold to the idea of the holy war, what we have is it's almost like what we're saying is that spirituality is good or evil. The physical is either good or evil, and that they're somehow in conflict with each other. Well, in the representation that exists, which in this case is the universe, and the universe is simply the beingness of God, the impossibility for there to be conflict between one aspect, which is physical, and one aspect to be spiritual. We humans don't do a very good job of understanding that there's equality, balance, relationship, purpose, and harmony that leads to peace, serenity, and tranquility within the context of the existence, which leads an individual on a personal level to be a way-shower, deliverer, and healer, which Jesus exemplified. So then we ask ourselves a very straightforward question. Well, how can I become in tune with and in sync with the equality, balance, relationship, and purpose that exist as my life that is simply a representation of the realness that exists as a personal truth that is simply then shared with others in ways that I refer to as creative and conducive? How do I get there? How do I get to that point from my life? And that begins the process. And the process is simply every time that something comes up, as an emotion, as a thought, as a behavior, as an involved activity, I am simply shown what's going on. And it's very straightforward. Is it joy? Is it pain? Is it love? Is it fear? Is it light? Is it dark? And then all of a sudden, it's like I'm given the opportunity of saying, okay, well, I am going to choose. And I put it in, I like to use fours, groups of fours. So I'm given the opportunity to feel, sense, think, and envision my life as a representation of, and then I start filling in the blanks, which is joy, which is love, which is kindness, which is compassion, so that hopefully my life can simply be something that works, in which there's connection and integration in my life that touches the lives of others in an empowering way. And it's very simple and straightforward.
Mm-hmm. Now, you're saying this, what you're saying, Teresa is echoing in the chat room, that we need to go within the heart.
Mm-hmm.
This tuning into the heart, it changes the body automatically, and in time will work its way to the head. I agree. You know, we have within us a guidance system, that instinctual wisdom that comes through the body. The soma, kinesthetic memory. There is a guidance system within that if we feel that or follow that, I love that. Dougie Slap, soma sonar. Ooh, I love that. Ooh, that's like a book or something. Soma sonar, or a song. Get your soma sonar going.
Soma sonar will lead the way. You'll find your way. Hey, 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 hey.
Hey.
There we go.
Got a gong on that. I love it. I'm going to get my drums out. Yeah, the soma. Yeah. But I think a lot of this is people learning how to read it, feel it. You know what I mean? Internally. Got a question from Ancient Mind. We all know that there has to be a balance of good and evil. As the spiritual movement rises, what would not promote chaos to provide balance? I'm going to jump in there, and you can take over, Dougie, because I started writing this in the chat room. The idea of good and evil, and as well as gravity is a form of duality. when you, you know, if you will, on a physical, metaphysical, physical level, if you will, the idea of up and down, that something holds me in place, or light and heavy. So this good and evil is really only on the third dimensional plane. It's a way to, in some ways, a lot of doctrines, to answer certain questions, sometimes to alleviate pain, sometimes to give an answer to that which is unknown, that is so much bigger than all of us, of why certain things manifest the way that they do. But now, you are right, Ancient, that the chaos, but out of the chaos comes new order. You know, out of confusion comes creativity. And I always use the idea that, you know, when you're cleaning out a closet, that when you take all the stuff out, it's very messy, and or garage, you know, you got all that junk in the garage, and you clean it all out, and then at one point you even don't even know if you can put it back, or what do I keep, or what should I get rid of? How am I going to fit this back in, or where do I fit it back? Do I need to put shelves in? So we're kind of in the chaotic, confusion, dismantling phase and bringing it to order. And that's individually as well as collectively. Those that have been walking a bit more aware and awake have already been doing this. But now, see, positive ancient mind, you're talking about replacing good energy or positive energy with evil, with negative energy. If we can reframe this, you need both the positive and the negative. That's the void is the negative, the feminine is the negative, the positive is the active or the electrical. So just like with an electrical outlet, you need those positive and negative prongs. You know, you need the positive of the electrical, right, the AC/DC. There's a reason for that. But you can reframe it to say, perhaps, I like to use the phrase less life, non-life enhancing behaviors or actions. So yes, there can be perhaps evil or negative, perhaps actions, but yet in the whole big scheme of the universe, it all fits together and has meaning and purpose. And part of it is because we are playing out this polarity on this dimension. So, but what you want to start refraining from is, like Douglas is saying, categorizing things as good and bad or evil and good. You know, we really got to, if you do it, what I try to do is then step back. Even when I'm looking at someone and to me they're not very conscious, what I've been saying is they're not very conscious on this dimension, or this level, or this density, because the truth is, on some level, some, you know, in our expanded consciousness, everyone is whole, perfect, and complete, and completely aware. It's just, what are they acting out on this level or this dimension? Douglas, you want to?
Yeah,
pop
I
in
think
there?
That what happens with people is that we have to get away from the idea that if you have people that are doing negative things, understand what that negativity is based upon.
Which is usually a wound.
Yeah, it's like it's just like we've decided, okay, selfish individuals are evil and positive individuals are good. In order for there to be conflict, there has to be hatred. And you don't have good hatred and evil hatred. You have good. You simply have hatred versus hatred, and that's every single kind of conflict that exists. When an individual understands that, they simply will no longer engage in the process of conflict with themselves through others. Because really what we're doing is we're resolving the seeming conflict between ourself with a capital S and our ego.
Yes.
There are two kinds of representation. One gives representation to the universe. The other gives representation to specificness. From the perspective of the ego, there is chaos. From the perspective of the self, there's only infinity. And so depending upon how we identify ourselves and what we relate to is the basis for what we choose to believe, what we choose to get involved with. And the difficulty comes up is that if you have decided to practice a particular belief system, and the belief system as the ideology of dogma simply says, well, this is the ideology that has been practiced for thousands and thousands and thousands of years. The question simply comes up to this. I said, do we ever question the intention of why a given systems theory or philosophy or psychology exists? If we don't, it simply means that the idea is going to continue forever. And if we human beings on the surface of this planet don't start examining our scientific ideology and our religious ideology, we are simply going to find that we, our basic accomplishments are going to be nuclear weapons in the context of science, and within the context of religion is the idea of a Satan that torments us and God that destroys us. And these don't even make sense when you think about them. They don't even make sense, and yet this is the accomplishment, the great accomplishment. When we look at the condition of the world right now, what we find lacking is social evolution. There is not social evolution because we are engaged in the same kind of psychology and philosophy now as we have been involved with going back to about 9,000 BC. So we have to ask ourselves, why, in the context of our humanity, is it even acceptable to any of us that there are such a thing as poverty, such a thing as greed, such a thing as gender disparity, such a thing as class distinction? These ideologies that we live should be unacceptable to us from the perspective that we are all in this human experience together. And if we are in this human experience together, then how do we, from the point of our life and times, resolve those things that are not tenable? And what we see happening, as Michelle has mentioned in the early part of the show, is we see these systems theories of greed and conflict and so on simply being brought down to where they are no longer going to be effective. And guess what, folks? War is absolutely reprehensible in any form. It has nothing to do with reality. It has nothing to do with truth. And yet why? Do we insist upon engaging in absolutely socially retarded and socially reprehensible behaviors when you are looking at the effects that it has on the planet, on each other? And absolutely, from my perspective, it doesn't even make any sense.
Yeah. Well, and that's the thing. It's beliefs that have been conjured up to serve the few. Now, let's hold that because we've got a caller, and I want to see if maybe they're just calling or clicking to listen or whatever it is. Hi, 270-319, you're on the air with Awakenings.
Hey, can you hear me?
Hey, I can. You're on the air with Doug Malloy and Michelle Mache of Awakenings. How are you?
I'm pretty good. This is Ancient Mind.
Hi.
I was just calling in to kind of clarify a little bit about what I was talking about.
Oh, cool. Okay.
Basically, what I'm saying is that with the age of the awakening coming, and we're seeing it more on a day-to-day basis everywhere. I mean, even, you know, all throughout the internet, you're finding more and more and more information about it. Okay, we're coming into a enlightened range. As all of this positive energy is being generated, the more and more positive energy is generated, where is the balance? I mean, you can't keep your negative energy. How do you balance it yourself? How do you keep your balance without affecting, let's say, the energy of the cosmos or whatever, without pushing your negative energy somewhere else where it has to affect something else?
But it will.
How I would answer it is this. The only way that there is equality and balance within the positive and the negative is an individual has to understand the purpose that each serves and the purpose that each represents within the context of their life as a representation of that. When we get to the idea that the good is positive and the negative is evil, we have automatically set up a dichotomy, and that dichotomy creates sin. It creates the idea of sin. It creates the idea of sickness. It creates the idea of disease. And it creates the process of death. Death is only possible when there is a lack of equality, balance, relationship, and purpose within the context of the life and that which is involved. So what we have is that when an individual is looking at the role of the positive and the role of the negative as energy, they mistake in thinking, well, it can only be one, it can't be both. And yet, when we look at our design, it's a binary vibrancy. When we see the heartbeat, that's a binary vibrancy. When we see the breathing, it's a binary vibrancy. When we see waking and sleeping, it's a binary vibrancy. When there's incarnation and ascension, it's a binary vibrancy. So what we have is we don't have a conflict between the in-breath and the out-breath. We don't have a conflict between waking and sleeping, and yet what we have done is we have taken a very, very straightforward process, which is binary vibrancy, and we have more or less given it the connotation that, oh, it's good and it's evil. And the simple fact is that if an individual truly understands equality and balance, there is never going to be conflict between that individual and somebody else. And what we have done in our religious ideology and our social development is simply say it's me versus you, and I am going to do everything in my power to see to it that I'm right and you are wrong.
Now, Angel, let me ask you something. What do you mean by negative energy? Let's clarify that first, because let's roll it back. Because part of why I want to do that is one thing that's happening between now and 2012. It's been happening actually since the mid 90s, but you'll see more of a push. Is you're going to see language more hyphenated, like a lot of different terms to describe one thing, because we're going to be updating our language, how we write, how we think, because we're moving into an area where it's lots of gray areas. It's rainbows of colors, and like Douglas was saying, it's no longer going to be evil and good and black and white, up and down. It's going to be, oh my God, a simultaneous reality, a different aspect of self is coming through. All these multitasking, all these shades and levels, you can see it already happening now with so much stimuli that we have. So let's roll it back. What do you mean by negative energy?
Well, obviously it's a, you know, what Douglas said, it makes absolutely perfect sense. I've been studying ascension and consciousness for the better part of 6 full years, and this is the first time I've ever heard anybody attack a negative energy as a positive aspect to one's life, which is totally condescending in itself. The ideas that are out there and the information is out there is misconstrued and, you know, misunderstood. I think that there's only a handful of people that actually understand it, and I thought I was closer, and this is one more piece I needed to understand before I could move on.
Absolutely.
You know,
we'll try
one
30 of years
things,
of studying
one,
this. But I kind of wanted for people in the chat, to, what do you mean by negative energy, though? You're qualifying?
Okay, imagine yourself, you get a new promotion, but you always imagine the worst possible thing happening. Okay, that type of negative energy, like a doom and gloom attitude. That's what I've always made the that was my understanding of a, you know, negative energy. When you're opposite of positive behavior, opposite of whatever you want to call it, that is the negative energy I'm speaking of.
So the pessimistic. See, to me, that's of the mental realm. That's like that's programming. Because we don't come in with that. We don't come in.
So many times when people talk about auras or personal energies, they talk about shedding your negative energy.
But
and
they're
now,
wrong.
Wouldn't that create an imbalance? Okay.
Well, first of all, if we roll it back, and I'm glad you're bringing this up, they're absolutely wrong, and they're newbie metaphysicians. That's why you'll see on Awakenings, I'm very picky about a lot of the guests that I bring on. They're people that have really been studying this a long time and living this, and they're going back to books that are not distilled. If anyone is first of all, like if someone's doing healing work and they're trying to protect you, see, that's a belief system. because we're all connected. Everything and everyone is connecting. It's just varying densities or emotion or vibrational frequencies. So if my vibrational frequency is at a certain level, I'm not going to have a certain experience. I used to do depossession work, okay? And to me, because I didn't believe in it, I was very much able to depossess people of demons and all kinds of things they had in their mind, right? And I had worked with a really, really good teacher who used to do that also and didn't do it. And he said, Michelle, if you had one slip of a belief that there was a devil or this demon could get you or be possessed, because you had have that belief system, you would be susceptible to that. Every person that I ever did depossession work either was molested as a child and they compartmentalized, and they had heavy religious background, heavy religious belief. If you don't have that belief, you can't have those experiences. So the idea of when people are saying you're negative, or if you have a thought, even to say you have a negative thought or that you're going to create something, you know, like if I think bad thoughts or I think something bad is going to happen to me, then I'm going to draw it to me. That's not true. We don't create with our beta mind. We create by our programming, our conditioned response patterns on the subconscious level. But, everyone, the beauty of this is we can change our conditioned response patterns. We can deprogram ourselves. Because so whatever you're coming in with, if like the great example that you're giving, Ancient, of, you know, going for this job and then starting to think pessimistically, you were conditioned to respond that way as a protection mechanism. So it's not energy is just energy. The same energy that you have, the Kundalini energy, is the same energy you use for reading, for writing, for sex, for connecting as we are right now, for creativity, for inventing. We've just, on this dimension, we've just qualified the energy. You know, you have a positive and a negative chat output. Chad earlier in the chat said yin and yang. You can't create without the yin and the yang, or the positive and the negative energy, the mother, the father, the feminine and the masculine, the AC and the DC. That's how this universe works. You know, you have to reach in your life. In other words, we're both magnetic and electrical. The magnetic part of us is the negative part of us. It's the void. It's the cosmic mother. The electrical part of us is the positive energy, but they're both needed and necessary for creation.
Okay, so a balance. Let me ask you both a question, and this is just a quick example. In order to create a new ideal, wouldn't you then have to destroy one? And that would create balance.
I said, no, it's not about in the destruction. It's not about in the destruction of something. It's simply resolving it so it no longer exists. I said, I'll give you an example.
Oh, okay. Okay,
I'll give
that
you an
makes
example.
Sense.
Okay, I'll give you an example. As long as we hold to the idea of good versus evil, there would be conflict with the idea that something has to be destroyed. But the very nature of creativity is something that's created, it's brought to life, and then three things take place. There's the self-sustaining, the self-regenerative, and the self-perpetuating according to that which is instantaneous, spontaneous, and simultaneous. Now, when we interject into that process the idea that something begins and then it ends, there will seemingly be the process of it destroying itself to recreate itself, but that's not what happens. The cessation of something only takes place because it's not self-sustaining according to its design, because
it's extinct.
Yeah, it becomes extinct because it is not based from its point of reference on that which has the ability to self-sustain itself. The only thing that is self-sustaining, self-regenerative, and self-created and so on, is through the process of will, love, light, and consciousness. The only way that will, love, light, and consciousness can exist as something specific is you have to have denial, fear, darkness, and unconsciousness so that the specificness can be represented in a certain way. That does not mean that the universe that exists as and from the perspective of something that is specific, it doesn't cease to exist. The simple fact is that if I close my eyes, does that mean that the world ceases to exist from the perspective of my closing my eyes? Yes, it absolutely does. From the perspective of what is? Absolutely not. When we are looking at the involvement that we have within the context of our life, we have a choice that we can make. If we move into either or, greater than, lesser than, what we do is we simply disallow from the perspective of both existing at the same time. It's like I'm standing on the surface of the planet right now. I'm looking up at the sky. I see the sun. I don't see the universe. Does that tell me from my perspective right now that the universe doesn't exist? I said, yes, it does. But the reality is the universe still exists. So when we are looking at the role that the positive plays and the negative plays, it always comes down to one fundamental thing. I have the ability to choose what I want to feel and what I want to think in a given moment. It's just as easy for me to feel something positive as it is for me to feel something negative. The reason why there is both is the only way that I can understand what joy is there has to be something that joy is not. So pain serves that purpose. It's the same thing with fear. It is absolutely impossible for an individual to understand something lacking something that's contrasted to it. It's an impossibility. So
we have experiences. Okay, so basically, in the case of, let's say, Buddhist monks, they tell you that you have to understand suffering. Now I understand that once you understand the suffering, it can be removed because now you know what the opposite of suffering
is. Yeah, because it goes right back to one of the premising ideas of this show. If you understand the purpose that something serves your experience, you will simply be able to understand it and you will no longer be affected by it. The only reason why we have experiences as we do is so that we accomplish one thing from that point or that reference or that perspective, and that is understanding what it is as a representation.
I want to jump in here for a sec, Douglas. A couple of things because I want to put it. One thing, though, is energy. We talk about extinction, but if nothing really leaves, it just changes shape and form. So,
right.
And that's a lot part of the law of physics. It's not just metaphysics; it's a law of physics that everything that is in the universe is intrinsic. It's needed and necessary here. So nothing really ever leaves. It just changes shape and form.
When you die,
I mean the body is dismantled or turns to ash, but that spirit just is subsumed back into the all that is, but the holographic imagery is still there.
I'll just interject this. Is the only reason why the term extinction is used is it means that the life form as it was is no longer going to be a part of this particular experience. And what was going to happen with a lot of people are going to find that the reincarnation process for them will no longer exist because their vibratory rate as their existence is not evolved enough or is not high enough or fast enough to continue and be maintained within the context of the vibratory rate of the planet. If we simply think of the process as moving from the first chakra to the second chakra to the third chakra to the fourth chakra, how many people on the surface of this planet have moved from their first and second chakra, like Michelle Mache mentioned at the beginning of the show, into their third chakra and into their fourth chakra so that they can maintain their existence according to their life as a representation of what corresponds to the very state of existence as this planet.
I think, too, what you're saying in what remains, if you think about it, everything that is made manifest, if we look at this metaphysically, and if you dial back to some of the unadulterated aspects of the Bible, if you go back to the Aramaic of the Lord meaning law, respect, or fear meaning respect, when they were talking about universal laws, you had the word. So out of that vibration, first we have a vibration that happens, and out of that vibration comes a thought form. And from that thought form comes physical or manifested form. So when vibrationally, that's why in ascension it's so important to raise your vibrational frequency, reinforce that and keep it raised. What will happen is as the vibrational frequency is raised and maintained, certain thought forms will no longer be in the etheric plane and will no longer manifest physically. So I agree with you, Douglas. What will happen then is certain beliefs, behaviors, and certain people will not be around because they are not representative of the more expanded, inclusive thought form. Every one of us is a thought form. Every one of us is a divine aspect of the all that is, our own little individuated aspect with the soul's, you know, impulse, the soul's signature, if you will. And it, to the degree that we evolve and expand, then we are useful. To the degree that we're not, we become, as Doug said, extinct. We become snuffed out, you know.
Well, there's another perspective also, and this is something that I'm brought back to all of the time, and that is one of the ways of understanding Lord God is that it's not Lord God, it's Warlord God. And when we are looking at specifically the Old Testament, there is a process that takes place, and it's conquering, enslaving, and destroying. And what that process is that conquering is simply when an ideology, an idea is introduced that is accepted by people without them questioning what the ideology is. It conquers the individual, then it enslaves the individual to the ideology or the dogma. And what happens is that if that process is maintained, then it brings about the destruction of the process, which simply means the cessation of the existence of the ideology according to those people who chose to live it as their reality and truth. So what we have is that when we are looking at specifically fear, judgment, and persecution, war, greed, and oppression, through the process of conquering, enslaving, and destroying, what we simply have is you have an individual who comes along. In this case, the warlord God Jehovah comes along and says, okay, I'm going to take you as my group of people, but in order for you to be accepted by me within the context of your now God, you have to live your life in which you go about exterminating other people according to the philosophy that I'm giving you. That is
See, I think that's
culture.
All dogma. That's all interpretation to me, Douglas, because I did my dissertation for my PhD on this, as God is an energy, that it's this life force, animating energy that we all are, but because
right,
I think
because
that the old paradigm.
Right,
yeah, I agree with you. That old paradigm
thing.
Is to slave.
Just one thing. In order for us to believe something, we either get it from within our life or from an external source. And one of the things that we are not real clear on is where does the psychology, where does the philosophy of war come from? And this is where we have to really examine our idea of God, because we absolutely are convinced within the context of our humanity that God is something to be feared, that God is going to punish us, that God is going to destroy us. And that becomes very, very problematical because creation does not work that way. When something is created and brought to life, it is not destroyed. It basically continues on forever. When an individual is involved and in tune with the process of creativity as a manifestation, guess what, folks? There will not be disease. There will not be suffering.
Yeah.
There will not be death. None of those things will take place, and it's very straightforward. Love is the physical. Light is the spiritual.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and Douglas, you bring up a good point in what I was mentioning earlier, that the language has to change. And
right.
Douglas actually has a book coming out on this, so this will be great. We'll have him back on for this. But, you know, part of my, to get my, you know, advanced degree and do the training that I had to do, I had to study, you know, all the major religions and, you know, look at the theology aspect of it and the theosophical aspect of it, which is the study of God, the study of wisdom. But all what we have now, these diluted books, were all, you know, King James, you know, the Roman version, every version of that Bible has been changed to benefit a few, you know, ensnare the many and keep people basically in line. So you really have to, you know, you either have to do a lot of your own homework, inner work, or like Teresa was saying earlier, And Douglas, you were saying go by that inner guidance system. Within,
well, yeah, because
right? You have to go by your own inner map, because it's even the books and ancient. You were mentioning the Buddhists. All those, when you study all these religions, what you why there's such a common thread. What you begin to realize is, it's the human mind trying to create systems of, that's why it's called doctrines, systems of thought and belief, to basically calm themselves down and give themselves direction and keep order. So a lot of different, you know, you've got the bardos. I mean, you can believe in that when the, right? It's all doctrine. It's all, but it's a lot of it is man-made. And I think part of our ascension, getting it out of duality, is each of us to do our own inner and outer research to see where is the truth with the big T, where is the real spiritual metaphysical truth, and what are doctrines that are man-made that I can believe in or not believe in. Maybe they enhance your life. But it's still, I think we have to remember all of these books, all of Hinduism, Buddhism, Christianity, you know, whatever, Islam, all of these came from men and women. Wicca, I don't care what it is. They're all beliefs that the ego mind conjured up to make.
Well, actually,
to give,
one of the things a person can do is if they take the idea of Hinduism and simply sum it up into one word, you get the focus, the primary focus is God. When you take the idea of Buddhism and sum it up into one word, you get life. When you take the idea of Christianity and you sum it up into one word, you get the Christ. When you take the New Age, you get service. Mm-hmm. So you can take Hinduism, Buddhism, Christianity, and the New Age movement and simply say God, life, the Christ, service, and then you can tack next to those oneness, healing, wholeness, and ascension. So you can simplify the process and focus on what oneness is and what healing is and what wholeness is and ascension is, rather than trying to sift through all of the ideas, because when we think about the process and we think about what's involved, we are simply trying to make sense of things from our own perspective. And a lot of times we identify strongly with science or religion or something else, and then all of a sudden it's like, okay, well, what is the truth that you are trying to represent? What is the realness that you feel your existence is based upon? That to me is the path. That to me is the study. And some people just do a better job of it than others. That's not to say that there's right or wrong with these things. It's just I ask people from time to time, what is your realness? What is your truth? And when are you going to represent that as your life?
Yeah. See, that's what I love about what you're saying, and also what you're saying in your book, The Nature of the Self, is that, and again, because we're in this Aquarian age, it's about individuality fitting into the collective in a creative service. So
that's exactly right.
Yeah, we do have to ask ourselves, what beliefs suit me, the me that I am, like Douglas says, that I came in to be, my little life. What? So no one's wrong or right. I mean, if you're like full-on Buddhist, you know, and you want to sit in the uncomfortable little chair, you know, and chant, and more power to you. But they're not more, I think we have to know that you're not. They're not more evolved than someone else that's doing their thing a different way. I guess it's kind of a colloquial way to say it, right? I mean, we have to, you know, sister on a mission in the chat room was saying, how do I know? Because I always talk about there's the big T, the big truths, and then the little T, which is our ego preferences or work for us, which is, you know, religions, even coming here, beliefs. You know, we all have similar beliefs, so we're all really gelling that we have enough, you know, other non-same beliefs that keep it interesting. You kind of have to go within. I think you have to really, you know, and Chad said that too, start with yourself, what resonates for you.
Well,
you
here's
what,
something that,
right?
Here's a simple question that I could ask everybody is what is the existence of, and then you draw a blank line, what is the existence of fear? What is the existence of love? It's like when you look at yourself in the mirror, you're looking at the masculine and the feminine as a representation of mom and dad. Well, guess what? There's also the love and the light that corresponds to the creator and the father. Then when we take our heart and our head, there's a correspondence there. Right and left sides, there's a correspondence there. And then all of a sudden we find out, oh, we can start taking things into consideration from our point of reference. What is God, universe, divinity, deity, love, light, positive, negative, masculine, feminine, emotion, thought, experience and expression, reality, truth, being, knowing, path, purpose, as the self and or the ego? And then all of a sudden we find that, guess what? Everything in our life is going to correspond to what those ideas are as the nature of who and what we are. And when we get into the very, very, very basic mechanics of it, which is simply what we feel and what we think and what we act upon, all that we are doing is becoming self-reflected to understand why we feel what we do, why we think what we do, and then we go through the process of simply deciding what do we want to feel, what do we want to think, and what do we want our point of reference to be that we contribute to others.
It's our free will choice.
Right, and then it comes down to we have the ability to choose.
Mm-hmm. And I think that's part of the big awakening, is that we do have choice. You know, it's, we always had choice, but we had systems in place, you know, familial, societal, perhaps, racial, environmental, that said that we didn't, that we had to subscribe a certain way. But that's, again, the layer being peeled, that I can really live my life, as I feel.
Yeah, well, stop and think about this, is that somebody's going to come along and says, okay, my reality is true, and then people say yay, no, agree, disagree. And everybody's mm-hmm. doing that. So we've got Deepak mm-hmm. Chopra sharing his wisdom. We have Wayne Dyer. We've got the Ku Klux Klan. We've got mm-hmm. Idi Amin. You name the individual. You got Hugh mm-hmm. Hefner and so on. So you have these individuals who come along and they say, okay, this is my representation. And they, people either agree, disagree, understand, don't understand. And then we identify. And then it comes down to a simple process. What are we willing to identify as our life? Does it correspond mm-hmm. to the all-encompassingness of God and the infinitude of the universe? Or is it something more, or is it something more specific? So we identify with Dad as a musician and Mom as a house cleaner, or mm-hmm. whatever. And then we all of a sudden apply ourselves to different things so that we can say, hey, look, I identified with this individual and that individual, and I have patterned my life after them. And then as we go through life, all of a sudden we find out things are started to be removed. All of a sudden the house becomes extinct. The relationship becomes extinct. All of a sudden this ends, that ends, and all of a sudden we're left with basically who we are. And then we have an opportunity to say, okay, well, let me figure out who I am without any distractions at all. And as long as we're involved in relationship and occupation and all of the things that we basically distract ourselves, and everything in one way is a form of distraction, mm-hmm. what time do we get to that point in our life in which we can simply say, okay, I am this representation, and this is how God and universe and love and light and the positive and negative, because if we don't take the time to understand that pain is the path to joy, that fear is the path to love, guess what? We will never get there unless we understand that.
Mm-hmm. Mm.
I mean, if that's what we want to be as our representation, and most people don't want to take the time to move
themselves. It takes time.
Yeah.
Yeah, it takes time. And what I like, what you're saying, you have to take the time, you have to do the self-reflection. Which, by the way, humans, a component of us here, as ET light being, human being, multidimensional beings here, is we have reflecting consciousness. So we are to be consciously reflecting and consciously part of the evolutionary process within our life. Other species do not have reflecting consciousness. That's why they're always in the now, the present moment. So we're able to reflect and then create or co-create something. We're able to look and alter it, to change it. So it's very powerful. One thing I do want to speak upon, though, is that fear, that energy and motion. I mean, it is an emotion. It's part of what blocks or stops us is congealed or chronic states. I'm not sure how Douglas feels about this, but in my, you know, path of unfolding and, you know, my one of my beliefs, and that could change because I think also what Douglas is saying, you know, you're expressing you as you, but that can also change. The representation can change. We want to be flexible on it.
Well, can I just interject something very, very quickly here? Pain is the sense that we have separated away from something or out of something. Fear is the sense that we are distanced or separated from something so that we can stand as an individual representation according to our life as us. That is the purpose that they serve. If we move from the idea that there is separation and distance, what we move into is connection and integration. And that are the roles that pain and fear allow us to accomplish in our life. That's the purpose that they serve. As long
as
we
now I'm going to just put a little spin, just my little two cents on this is, for me, I'm talking a chronic state because fear you are absolutely never going to get rid of. It's hardwired in the unless you get rid of the medulla oblongata, you know, and the spinal cord, the nervous system.
Yeah, because you can't get away from pain or fear. They're part of the process, and they're not.
Yeah, well, they're also physically and physiologically. So, and they do serve a purpose of warning us to either don't do something or don't put your hand in the, you know, whatever, in the lion's mouth, or caution, reserve, wait. You know, more facts are needed. Have patience. You know, cross the street. Don't go that way. But so that's part of our instinctual awareness. That's our gut feeling, our gut knowing. It comes through the body wisdom, or as Douglas said earlier, the soma sonar. However, the chronic state of fear, you know, you've got three afflictions of attitude. You've got fear. Well, I'm talking chronic states. You've got chronic fear, chronic judgment, or comparison. So people that are always comparing begin to bifurcate or separate their energy, because when we're comparing, usually there's a jealousy there. We're looking to the left, we're looking to the right. We're not using our full energy. We're actually, as Douglas had said earlier, the distraction. When we're over comparing, we literally begin to weaken our energy that comes from source. We dilute it by spreading it out and being more interested or involved in what others, if you will, are doing. And then judgment also burns us out in a sense, because when we're judging, we are, it's like a ping pong back and forth. If you've ever heard yourself judging or judging someone else, it's always, well, why did they do that? Or why do they have that? Or I don't like that. I don't like what they're doing. Or if you're doing it to yourself, why did I do this? Why did I do that? So you begin to innervate your energy. You begin to lose energy. And fear, you notice, usually chronic states of fear cause people usually to hold on, clutch, become stagnant. You can even see it in the body. The body a lot of times gets hunched over, or it makes people overly amped, you know, like putting the gas pedal all the way down, you know, where they don't look within. Now, the higher harmonic, though, of judgment would be judgment with love, tenderness, and mercy, spiritual discernment, discerning, is this right for me, as Douglas was saying, does this fit my representation? So we are allowed to judge and to look and say, well, does this fit what I want to do? Is this where I'm at? Does this resonate with me? Comparison, noticing what you like, what you need, what you want. And then the higher harmonic of fear is that instinctual body, or I love that term, soma sonar that Douglas uses. I love that. But we don't want to live in that space, and that's, you know, those are those conditioned response patterns also that ancient mind was talking about. That if pessimism is a form of fear. It's a protection mechanism. When we're living in a chronic state of fear, a lot of people choose to be pessimistic as a way of protecting themselves from the unknown. You know, so I think it's healthy. I sometimes, you know, kind of do a little mental house cleaning, emotional, noticing, God, am I in a stuck state right now? Is there a chronic something happening, comparing? Am I over-comparing, over-judging? Is there fear coming up? You know, and then I transmute that energy. You want to transmute that fear into creativity. You want to harness it into usable, you know, energy here. Now, Douglas, one thing that we talked about, and I want to kind of get back to, you had that, in talking about these stuck states, the chronic fear, chronic judgment, you know, chronic comparison. If you see that coming up, you know, because you have something we talked about earlier about how does this serving me? What purpose does this serve my life process? Or where is this taking me? How would that fit in with our personal growth? How, asking this, you know, how would one look in their life and say, well, where is this taking me? What are these issues being a catalyst to resolve, you know?
Right. When an individual feels, well, a lot of it just comes down to the simple process of examining why a person feels, let's say a person moves into fear. And let's say fear is simply at the level of worry. And so an individual is worrying about something. Well, worry is simply the perception that if something bad or negative is going to happen based upon an individual's perspective. So then what we do is we can simply ask ourselves, well, why do I feel that I need to worry about this? Because worry is simply the perception that something is going to threaten or is a threat to an individual's existence as their life, as who they are. And so it gives us a very interesting point of reference to simply, why do I feel pain? Why do I feel fear within the context of this experience? Or why do I get angry? And the work is simply how quickly we can move to where we don't act upon things that remain unresolved, because every time that something presents itself to us, it's going to represent us as that in that way. So it might be a sickness, it might simply be a mood, it might be an attitude. Mm-hmm. And if we are hoping to move supposedly from point A to point B, standing in the same circle, it simply allows us to say within that moment, it's just as easy to be loving as it is fearing. It's just as easy for us to be joyful as it is for us to be pain. So why do we identify or attach ourselves to the pain and the fear as opposed to the joy and the love in the moment of our life? And that gives us simply a process. And I call it process resolution of emotional causation, because what I have found is that it begins with what I feel, then what I think, then what I act upon. And so the work that I do is simply, how quickly can I move from something negative into something positive? How quickly? And it's only through the process of experience that all of a sudden, and this is something that I'm learning the hard way, so to speak, is that a lot of times something will happen. And I said, well, why didn't I take that? Because I couldn't take it into possession, because it simply wasn't part of my awareness. Experience is the only thing that allows us to be awake, as you refer to, or aware, as we refer to in my radio program. And it's like how we become aware of something, and it's like, oh, then the next time we are aware of it or we're awake to the possibility, and it says, okay, now I will take this into consideration, because it was only through the experience that it presented the possibility that such and such was an existence of some kind in the context of my life.
And I think there's going to be there is obviously rungs and rungs of that, more and more levels of awareness. And that's why awakenings is awakenings. There's not just one awake or one awakening. You know,
yeah,
hold that thought, Dougie. We got a caller.
All right.
Hi, 313-537. You're on the air with Awakenings.
How you doing?
Hello.
Peace.
Hey, peace to you. You're on the air with Douglas Malloy. How are you doing?
I'm doing fine. I just was listening in. I couldn't hear the show from my radio. I was just listening in.
Oh, cool. Do you have a comment or question, or you just want to listen?
I just want to listen.
Okay. Thanks for sharing your light.
Yeah. The thing that I'm always brought back to is that each and every one of us is living a unique individual representation. And the question I ask myself is this: how many people on the surface of this planet can stand in front of a mirror and simply look in the mirror and said, yes, I did a very good job today as my representation of God and universe on the surface of this planet? And the sad fact is that there aren't very many people who are truly standing as a living representation to the realness of what God and universe are as a human beingness that knows, shares, and hopefully evolves beyond the idea of opposites in conflict.
And that conflict, too, it's a lot of the outer conflict is really an inner conflict reflected out.
Yeah, the only way that it's just like if anybody ever gets a chance to watch the movie Hero, it's my favorite movie of all movies, I think, there's a point where the individual who is an excellent swordsman realizes that when he has made peace with himself, he gives up the sword. And it's very, very eloquent how they represent and demonstrate this in the movie. So I recommend everybody. It's got Jet Li and Donnie Yen and a few other people. That's an absolutely wonderful. It's visually one of the most beautiful movies ever made. But that, we are simply moving from conflict to peace in our life so that there is harmony. When there is inner peace, there is outer harmony, because harmony is the relationship that peace has with everything else that is simply a representation of the self in an enlarged or a contextual format, so that within the context of our lives, there is a relationship that is established between myself as me and myself as everything in my immediate environment and so forth.
You know, in saying that and putting it in that context, to me that talks also about that having to go within and see where is there conflict within us. You know, that as there's less and less conflict, in fact, there it's one of the metaphysical principles, harmony through conflict. As we begin to take back the projections of what we see as happening outside ourselves, there is less and less conflict. There's more tolerance, and there's more harmony, you know, on the outside. That's one little tool that I use sometimes, and I feel like I'm conflicted with somebody or a situation. I look at that and I ask myself, well, how am I doing that to myself, or how have I done that before?
Right, and then it comes down to, and how I sum that up is that after all the books are read, paths are walked, and masters or teachers studied under, one still has the issue of the self to resolve, and what that comes down to is simply the ideal as it's designed, or the ego. And the ego will always believe of itself in context that differ from the nature of the self. So the conflict that we're resolving is between the ego and the self as a representation of what? The ego is like our outer sense of self as it corresponds to the biology of the planet, and the self corresponds to God and universe, divinity and deity and so forth. And what we are trying to do is connect and integrate what pertains to God and universe within the context of our life as a human being on the surface of this planet. And oftentimes one is either mistaken or missed or denied for the sake, you know, people say, oh no, it's all about spirituality, and they leave the physical out of it. And it's like, no, love is to the physical what light is to the spiritual. And when we are truly being and knowing love and light as the nature of the self within the context of the ego, guess what? The work is done, and then an individual is able to go out and get $75 to buy that bottle of wine, buy themselves a hamburger and some fries, and go out and have a good time with friends, of course.
That's right.
Got to have
that's
the
right.
Wine and the French fries. Got to have that fast food. Come on, let's go and have some fun.
Well, I know. It does. That's what we're all here for, right? Come on, everybody. I mean, you can play. I loved one of my teachers, and there's a it's in the Vedic. It's one of the Eastern books, but there's a wonderful story about someone taking the vow of poverty, and oh, I can't have this, I can't eat that, on and on and on and on and on. And the teacher says, well, there's no difference between you and the greedy man, because you're both over-consumed and concerned with money. So if somebody's taking a vow of poverty, or I can't have that, or I don't do that, or, you know, money is bad, they're just as, you know, on the same polarity as the overly, you know, greedy person. It's the same thing. It's, you know, so once we begin to realize, that's where our ascension comes in, ascending, expanding vibrationally and with our mental constructs, you know, expanding, blowing them out, if you will, that we don't live anymore in this, you know, polarity. We don't live off of that, stuck in that duality, that we're able to extend or expand or ascend beyond duality, which is hitting that eighth chakra and up. You know, actually the ninth chakra is the chakra of ascension. The eighth, you're just connecting to that awareness and understanding and the feeling of your higher self, soul self, your spiritual body, as Kathy was saying earlier. The more we can live in that space, you know,
right,
the less conflict too, right?
Well, I think that part of it is that in order for there to be ascension, which simply means to rise above, to take with and integrate into, is what's happening is that there's connection and integration. It's like the two things are required in order to ascend. One is the all-encompassingness of God, and one is the infinity of the universe, which is simply God's statement of itself as something. So God can say, I am. In order for us to ascend, we have to have a working knowledge of what we are, why we are, where we are, and so on, in order for that process to take place. And it's very, very useful for an individual to go into the chakras and understand what the chakras represent within the context of a person's life according to the design. And that's where a lot of the work that I do, it becomes an interesting process.
And we are the interesting process. We're the process, the processee, the processor.
Yeah, well, you know, it's like we are the creator, we are the created, we are creating, we are the creation, and we're all things, and we're no things at the same time. And so it just becomes interesting how we touch upon the life of who we are, and then are we simply comfortable? Are we comfortable with our life as who we are? And then do we expand our horizons to realize that everybody is an extension and expansion of who we are? There's only one of us here, and each is that representation. And we are in this together. I mean, the Christ means the collective consciousness of humanity living according to the will of God, the love of the Creator, the light of the Father, and the consciousness of all that is, which is the universe. And so we have to move into the realness that's true on a personal level. I mean, is it right here? Is it right now? And so it becomes the process. Does the existence of God and does the existence of the universe represent itself within the context of our life so that we can simply assist others in their life so that they can live according to their own realness that's just as real and true as mine? It doesn't have to be the same as mine. No. I want you as Michelle to live your life as you. I want Chad to live his life as him, and so on and so forth. And it's absolutely, you know, it's absolutely well, fine, and good, everybody living their life exactly as they're living it, because love accepts life as even-minded, and then guess what? We get to go have some wine.
That's right. Well, all we can do is live our life as us. Anyway, Dougie, slap on that note, I really want to thank you for being on Awakenings once again.
Well, thank you very much for having me. It's always a pleasure. I'm always honored when I get to hear the sound of your voice over the phone. It's always a great thing. And I'll let the audience know that tomorrow at 10 a.m. I'm going to be doing my show, Reality is Self-Defined as the Nature of a Self, on Aware Talk Radio, and we are going to take up a kind of a different topic. We are going to talk about healing modalities and how we can heal situations and circumstances in our life, and we are going to focus on some of the modalities that Michelle has actualized as a demonstration for her life and her purpose.
So we're going off air in a second. But, yes, tomorrow we will be kind of the second parter, bringing your mental constructs, your beliefs. So we'll move into the healing phase of what we've been talking to. So it's experiential. It's process-oriented so that you'll feel the tingle, continuing the tingle and feeling the tingle. So we'll be playing, if you will, in the healing modes. And then tonight we have our very own Chad Lillion, author and founder of Inner Circle Publishing.
My shadow self.
That's right, and creator of Aware Talk Radio. And we're going to talk about his book, on common sense, and also his concept or philosophy of mastermind and the synergy of what Inner Circle Publishing is all about. So I really hope all of you can come back for that. And come back in the morning, 10 a.m. Pacific time on Aware Talk Radio, where Dougie and I will be doing it again. Got the Aware Awake sandwich of love, light, and we're sandwiching you all in the chat room and also online in this love and light that is, as spiritual pilot said, we are God. The God is I am. As Dougie Slapp says, I am that, that I am. So hum, hum, so. Until next time, keep awake. Until next time, keep awake. Remember that God is you. I am that, that I am. So hum, hum, so keep awake.